this week's Yes to Life show. My name's Robin Daly, and I'm your host for the show. The Yes to Life show is all about integrative medicine and cancer, the broadest possible look at what's working for people and why. Sandria Williams is a highly qualified and experienced naturopath who, after a lifetime of practicing and lecturing in Australia and in the UK, has for the last decade or more focused exclusively on supporting people with cancer. She's a prolific writer and is the author of an extraordinary number of papers and articles, in addition to over 20 books. The most recent of these are three of a planned four, summarising her insights into cancer, gleaned from 40 years of practice and research. Sandria is a founder member of the British Society for Integrative Oncology. Her views on cancer depart significantly from those of orthodox medicine. And so for this week's show, I've come to her home in London to see if I can find out some of the key messages that she has to pass on to people with cancer. Good morning, Sandria. Thanks a lot for wanting to come on our show. You've got a very different view of cancer to orthodox medicine. Yes. Most importantly, I would say, in the breadth of that view. Okay. You've looked in minute detail at the whole process of cancer from start to finish and all its stages, and at what types of intervention are appropriate to each stage. Mm-hmm. And you've written about this in great detail. So to create this overview, you've synthesised your own kind of theory of cancer, if you like, and to do that you've pulled together lots of threads from different researchers over the last 100 years or so to build your own complete picture of cancer.
Yes.
So this is ambitious for one radio show, but I'd like to try and get an idea of this picture and to convey it to our listeners today. So maybe we can start right from the beginning and just say...
Okay. My initial training's in chemistry. I've got arguably 4 degrees in chemistry, the last one being a PhD in biochemistry of the detection of, very, very early detection of cancer. So I come into this whole field as a scientist and I look for the sort of evidence and solid information that one can build this on. I then did in Australia the naturopathic medical training, which is 4 years full time, much more solid than one's used to in this country. Mm. I don't claim to have created anything uniquely my own research. What I do most like doing is taking all the published literature that I can come across, all the ideas I can come across, and apply them. Now, it's never made sense to me, even from when I was doing my degrees in chemistry and in the first 10 years when I was in the mining industry and then did biochemistry much more solidly, to try and get restore health by feeding toxins into the body, starting even with a painkiller.
Right.
So we look at, as naturopaths, fully trained overseas naturopaths, at restoring homeostasis, clumsy word, returning the body to the way it should normally function. So we look at what's going wrong and what we need to do to change that chemistry right. Now, in terms of cancer, we know from way back in the second of my 5 books on cancer, the Cancer Concerns book, I've talked of John Beard in 1905, arguably, saying that cancer cells and the trophoblastic cells of the placenta are identical. Mm. And the placenta does the same things, in effect, as cancer does. It invades, it metastasizes. It invades, draws in the blood supply, and does all these things.
Mm. It's a very interesting comparison.
And that, yes, because when the fetus is 55 days old, it starts producing, and the mother starts producing too, arguably, a lot of pancreatic enzymes that stop this cancer-like activity. Therefore, he said, if one could give somebody with cancer a whole lot of pancreatic enzymes or extracts, we could stop the cancer activity. You know, basic physiological cellular chemistry and a logical answer to it. He was up, arguably, for being nominated for a Nobel Prize till that point. And when he came up with this ridiculous theory in the eyes of the medicos at the time, he was rubbished. He died a bitter old man in 1920-something. Nobody thought much of it. People went on using those ideas a little bit, but nothing very much happened. in the late 20s, early 1930s, Nobel Prize winner Otto Warburg, who won one and would have got a second except Hitler wouldn't let him accept it, said, look, the causes of cancer are lack of oxygen to the cells, to the little mitochondria in the middle of the cells where all the energy is created. And he said it's a separate cause, but in a way it's a contributing factor to that. A lack of what we now know of as all the vitamins, minerals and nutrients you need for the mitochondria to work properly. So in other words, it's nutritional. So it's oxygen to the cells, we know how to improve that. Micronutrients and macros, calcium, magnesium as well. And we know how to assess what that unique individual needs, not a general multivitamin, not a one program fits all. Some people need lots of calcium because of the way their metabolism works. Some need lots of magnesium and no calcium, even when they look like being calcium deficient. Some people need an acid residue diet, some need an alkaline residue diet. So we've got oxygen, we've got all the nutrients, then there's toxins. Now, when I went through university in the 1960s, there were apparently about 2,000 toxins added to our environment and food supply and household cleaners and everything else. There are now 80,000.
It's a good old days compared to now.
You cannot not be full of toxins. Even if, as I and hopefully my colleagues do, we eat a really good diet of organic food, purify our water and don't breathe when the big trucks go by. You know, so we need to have a very thorough detox program. Warburg knew that, and he said stress is the other problem, particularly the stress that is of the sort where you feel helpless and hopeless about things you can't change. You're in a stressful situation, getting out of it would create a worse one. That affects the adrenal glands, that affects oxygen to the capillaries, that affects your thing. It affects the way your cells handle glucose, because they can't metabolize it, and this all flows on. It's all biochemically absolutely sound. And then we have, arguably, if you like, a Dr. Frieder, Waltraud Frieder in America, in Munich, when I met her anyway. She's died now, 80, 90 she would have been, who said stress is the major cause of cancer. She's picking up on one part of Warburg's concept. What I'm doing is trying to pull it all together. And she gave a lovely long weekend, about a dozen of us from England had over there with it, you know, going through all the ramifications of stress and this and this and this. And then there is an immunologist in Japan, a Dr. Abo, who says, yes, stress is the cause of cancer, but it's not the adrenal deficiency that's the real problem, it's the immune deficiency that's the real problem. I don't think he's right there, but it's still coming together as a whole. Then we had a dentist, William Kelly, who's fairly well known in alternative circles, or known of, he's dead now, who at about 37 was diagnosed with multiple tumours, given about a month to live and died 40 years later. Using the enzymes, using nutrients and supplements, planning his programme for the unique requirements of that individual. His work was explored by Dr. Gonzalez, who's dropped dead of unexplained causes, like a lot of doctors recently in America in the alternative field, which is a bit worrying. Gonzalez, I was particularly enjoyed and very upset about. Very fine man, doing fabulous work in the same sort of way as I, but hey, he's one of the leaders in this whole field. But then there are people like Linus Pauling and his research in vitamin C, and Abram Hoffer, who's an awesome molecular psychiatrist. I met him often when I lived in Australia because they would come out and talk. And his big focus was niacin deficiency in schizophrenias. He came up with a lot of ideas on schizophrenias. It's off the track of our conversation, but with several subsets of schizophrenia defined by different biochemical errors, we were able to help a lot of people, I was when I was in practice and colleagues over there then, with that. But inevitably, he had a lot of patients who came in and they also had cancer or it came up. He says that in his view, there are six causes of cancer. Now, he's not a cancer specialist, but he certainly looked at toxins, what he called the cancer fungus, and we'd be looking at not just candida, but all of the fungi and parasites and the like that are part of the toxins bracket. Is the role of niacin, the role of vitamin C, the effects of stress. So you've got people, and many more that I haven't listed, in this whole field. It's like looking at Mount Everest and taking 2,700 different photos and finding they're all different.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, they're all describing the same mountain. And if you just put it all together. And so I put together programs, individual programs for individual clients that will help restore homeostasis. I'm not treating any disease. I'm not treating cancer. I'm not treating Lyme. I'm not treating chronic fatigue.
Right, so you're creating good health.
Restoring homeostasis.
Yes.
And so we look at getting tests. If people will do the whole program, everything I've said, and that word's very, very big, mm-hmm. means doing okay. a lot, yeah. they've all got better.
Mm.
Not because I've cured anything. I've just pushed their whole chemistry, their whole structure. And it's not just chemistry. That emotional side is hugely important.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And it obviously impacts. Molecules of Emotion, a lovely book by
Candace Pert.
Candace Pert, that's
yeah.
right. You know, actually showing the receptor sites for the hormone molecules from the brain and the neurochemicals from the brain on the immune system cells. You only got to turn your mouth down and your white cells start slowing down.
Wow.
You put a grin on your face and within no time. That fast. Your white cells, because in many white cells, that's their entire lifetime. Or, you know what I mean, they have very short lives. Everything's time is on a different scale. They're buzzing along.
Mm.
So it all comes together. And I'm running these seminars, and I'm trying to train a lot of the current students in these fields and practitioners in these fields who really want to specialize in this. And I shot some of them at the last level one seminar by saying, yes, some people with cancer, yes, I tell them to eat meat, lots of it.
Mm.
Oh, you can't do that.
Right.
You know, you must give it up. No, some people can be too alkaline.
Okay, well, let's go into this in a bit more detail because it's a very important subject, this one. There's huge disagreements, aren't there?
Yes.
On this
it's
whole
not
front. And
one fits
all.
Gonzalez. You get anything going. You know, oh, cholesterol's good for you or bad for you. Everybody must do this.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
You've
well,
got to find out what's...
That kind of simplistic view is kind of the media version. Is, you
it
know, it's like,
simple.
Oh, yeah, Mediterranean diet, it's good for everybody. And
nobody
course...
actually knows what the Mediterranean diet is.
Right.
It doesn't exist in the southern Mediterranean
no.
coast. It's a...
So let's talk a little bit more about the whys and wherefores of that, because Gonzalez himself is a big advocate of completely different diets for different people, I know that.
Yes,
and it's not a guessing game, it's a very reasoned approach
yes.
he was taking. So maybe you could tell us a bit more about, well, the whys and wherefores of why such radically different diets would help people.
You've got two parts of your autonomic, think automatic, nervous system.
Mm-hmm.
You're not in control of this bit. Half of it, the sympathetic half, for want of a better word, that's what it's always been called, deals with your fight and flight, you're dealing with the outside world, your blood goes to your legs, your arms, your eyes, your heart. It's got to come from somewhere. So your parasympathetic system, which deals with internal housekeeping, shuts down. You can't run from lions and tigers and say,
right.
actually, excuse me, I need a toilet break. You'd be dead. You'd be eaten. So it's like you can pick a car off your son if it's run over him, because your whole sympathetic system is dominant and active and the parasympathetic is quiet.
Mm.
When you get back in our evolutionary history to the cave or get up your tree and are safe, the sympathetic system turns off. The internal housekeeping turns on. The blood goes back to your abdomen.
Mm.
You can digest food. Digestive enzymes are produced. Hydrochloric acid is produced. You process urine. You process stool. The liver starts working better again and so forth. Now, you can't turn on the parasympathetic system. You can only turn off the sympathetic system.
Got you. So it automatically runs in downtime, so to speak,
yes.
when the other things...
Yes. It's the default mechanism when the other's not called up.
Yeah.
Now, if you're in good balance... You've got an equal balance of sympathetic and parasympathetic.
Mm-hmm.
most people are not in balance, or most of the people that come in as clients are not, because they wouldn't otherwise come in if they were in good balance. If you're sympathetic dominant, think of it as being too go, go, go. Your diet will need to be one that helps you. This is very simplistic, but it's descriptive. Your diet needs to be one that relaxes you, slows you down, doesn't put a lot of effort in requirement into your parasympathetic digestive system. So it's one of a lot of fruits and vegetables, complex carbohydrates. This is if you don't have cancer. Meat is too difficult to digest for them. They'll often say after a big meat meal, if you're sympathetic dominant, you know, right, I've eaten too much or whatever. The parasympathetics will get a large steak. I dine often at one of my clubs. Another night, one of the guys had roast beef and whatever off the trolley. I mean, it was three huge slabs of roast beef. And he said, take away the vegetables, they spoil the meal. And somebody made a comment, and this chap said, yeah, I can eat a whole cow if it was put on the table. And he's very, very slim. And he just eats meat, meat, meat. It's his pattern. If he had a vegetarian meal, he'd eat it, and half an hour later say, well, I'm famished, where's the next meal? Because he's, you know, devoured it. It happens that, as far as we know, most people who get solid tumours have a dominant sympathetic nervous system. They're the go-go ones, don't digest their food so thoroughly, active, whatever. And so for most people who get solid tumours, the diet of a appropriate diet is the, not vegetarian diet, but the less red meat and much more vegetables. And it depends. William Kelly had 11 different metabolic states between the extreme parasympathetic and extreme sympathetic, with different diets and different supplements for each of them.
Right.
So when you say, oh yes, if you've got cancer, you should eat, you know, larger fruits and vegetables and give up meat and chicken, you're more right than wrong.
That's quite often true then, yeah,
yes,
because it's the majority.
But, you know, I've got clients at the moment who are parasympathetic dominant with the solid tumours, and I'm trying to convince them to eat meat.
Okay.
He didn't have cancer, but I had a friend, not a friend, a colleague, a client, some years back. He was overweight, 60, 50s odd, at least pre-diabetic, if not diabetic. His blood sugar was all over the place. High triglycerides, high cholesterol, no energy, high blood pressure. Desperately trying to get healthy. And he said, look, I keep doing what I'm told to do. I read the papers and magazines. I'm trying to eat a low meat, high vegetable, you know, carbohydrate-rich diet and lose weight. And I said, and I just go on. Everything goes on being wrong. All the tests are wrong. And he said, I don't feel good. So I thought, I don't know what's going to happen here. Had him do, we do a couple of tests for metabolic type. You can do a questionnaire test that we have people do, and you can analyze hair samples and look at their sodium, potassium, calcium, magnesium balance and get, so you've got a couple of ways of looking at it to try and get a pretty accurate idea. He turned out to be of the type should eat a lot of meat. Which he was not doing. So I said to him, right, you go home and you can have eggs and organic bacon for breakfast and steak and for lunch and steak for dinner and fish and fish and eat. And he looked at me and said, but that's all the foods I love. I said, yes, eat them. He said, but my doctor said no, my wife says no, my family says no. I said, look, just do it for a month and come back, having been your doctor, seen your doctor again and get all the tests done. Within a month or 5 weeks, he was back. His weight was down, his blood pressure was down, his blood sugar was down, his cholesterol was down, his triglyceride down, his energy was up. And he went on doing it. You know, you need to take that sort of care. Yeah. And it's, you need to get the supplements right. You know, you'd give vitamin A to half, you'd give carotenoids to the other half. You give ascorbic acid to one, calcium ascorbate to the other. But it's not just those two. Imagine north, south, east, west axes. Walcott, in, he's now anyway in Seattle, Washington State, said, well, yes, but there's a fast and slow oxidizer axis as well. And so the test that he set up, the questionnaire he set up, will tell you whether you're fast or slow, parasympathetic or sympathetic dominant, or a balance this way or a balance in the other axis. That gives you just a sensible basis for restoring the way that body should be. And then everything works better. You're not, and if you're balanced, well, you eat, you know, a bit of everything, if you want to be really careful, but, you know, this not so practically easy to do. In one meal, you might eat meal the foods that more encourage the sympathetic side, and the other meal, ones that more encourage the parasympathetic side, not to put it into conflict. But really, if you're dominant and balanced in the middle, you're going to be pretty well fine. Mm-hmm. But then you still need to do, you need to make sure they've got the nutrients they need. And, you know, we have a program, I put selective products together to try and give people the right nutrients for their type of metabolism. You still need to do all the detoxing. You still need to take pancreatic enzymes. We have a huge amount of research on the benefit of them, and Gonzalez is a key player in that field. Mm. And you still need, my view, to have psychotherapy and deal with the emotional issues. Mm. When you do all that, cancer can't grow.
Right.
Even, and, you know, people have had terminal patients and get up and walk home.
Mm. Mm. So you're talking about cancer. Of course, you describe cancer as a process.
Yes.
Quite distinct from any actual sort of physiological thing as a tumour.
It's all physiological. Well, but it's okay. Not one day, no cancer, have tumour, have cancer. It starts 1 or 2 years. It may start 10 years earlier.
Mm.
And this is where the early testing comes in. The minute you start getting the mitochondria goes wrong, then genes start getting changed from proto-oncogenes to oncogenes. The current medical research focuses on the genes, but they've been altered by the prime cause, which is what we're addressing.
Yes.
So once you start getting the mitochondria starts going wrong, a little bit of glucose builds up in the cell, you get a bit of lactate, you know, a few things start happening. You might change a few proto-oncogenes to oncogenes, but they might not. You can have a lot of bad genes and they don't get expressed. Mm. Even the mutated BRCA1 and 2 genes can be there all your life and not be expressed. Once they start going wrong, you started on this process. And then, let's say 8 years later, you're suddenly divorced or you lose your job or you're in an intolerable situation, and then it takes off.
Mm.
And then it seems like about 1 to 3 years later, you get the diagnosis of cancer.
Yeah.
So the process starts. It's not, you know, people come and they say, oh, look, you know, my tumour's gone. Well, that's terrific, but now what? You know, mm. you've got to go, you've got to restore that homeostasis right back to the start.
Yeah. So looking at it as a process is a fundamentally different way of looking at the whole situation. It gives you
added to that, we've got many people and other colleagues have said the same. They might have a tumour. They might have had the tumour and been told that was fatal.
Mm-hmm.
They might have felt a lot better on the program of, you know, Gonzalez or any of the other people doing this. And the tumour might be there on, you know, physical exam, x-ray, whatever. But there's no cancer anymore.
Mm.
It stopped.
Right.
So it's not a question of getting rid of the tumour. And I was at a talk the other day at the Royal Institute of Chemistry, and the guy was really interesting, talking about the structure of the molecules that they're doing tests on to see how effective they are as chemotherapy agents.
Hmm.
And he was saying, you know, you move this bit of this molecule, add a chlorine atom, and you get a different effect. I said, well, how are you measuring the success? Oh, he said, we measure the size of the tumour. And I said, do you know that not all the cells in the tumour are cancer cells? And you might be just getting rid of some of the healthy cells. Oh, no, he said, I didn't know that. So then I said, well, now, you know, what are you going to do now as your marker of how successful the chemicals are? Oh, well, he said, we have a useful working model. We'll keep using it.
All right. No change.
It's not a question of getting rid of the tumour.
No.
And if the tumour's gone, you're not necessarily in remission.
Mm.
But if... See, I do one test panel, which will tell us maybe 10 years before you're going to get a tumour, that you're heading along that process. But of course, that's a time when it's much easier to reverse it.
To change it, yeah.
And then I've put together with the backup facility of the Galkina Laboratory, who's a great asset to this whole profession, a panel of 10 or so tests. Once we know that someone's got cancer, there's no point in doing the first test panel because we know they've got cancer.
Yeah.
This second then directs what we do. Not because we're giving, say, bindweed to cure cancer, but because we know that giving a product made from a derivative, this, da, 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 will inhibit the formation of new blood vessels, because we've done the test and one of them says they're making too many new blood tests, vessels. Or we're saying that their super protective P53 protein is mutated. Well, we have one or two plant derivative products that, and I have patients who've had clients who've done this, taken that, and the next test, there's no more mutated P53. If P53 is mutated, not only can it not insist that cancer cells are destroyed, faulty cells anyway are destroyed, like putting the wrong key in the lock, it can also block any healthy P53 from doing its job. So it's a double problem.
Right.
So with these 10 tests, we look at things like voluntary cell death in various forms, at the tendency for easy metastatic invasion, the new blood vessels, a number of things. And then we can target what we do, not to treat a disease, simply to restore normal function.
Right, so the testing is a crucial part of the your process responding.
It is, and we probably do need it today because there's so much going against us with all the toxins and everything else that's going on. And because we have so many corrective remedies, supplements, whatever you like to call them, it enables us to use them to the maximum. But in 1980 or thereabouts, when of course we had so far fewer toxins, and I was teaching for all that 20 odd years in the big naturopathic college in Sydney in nutrition and biochemistry, the notes that I had, I mean, the cancer lecture took 2 hours, that was it. We had a little booklet, little A5 booklet, about 40 pages thick, if that.
Yeah.
We knew about vitamin C intravenously. We knew about selenium, we knew about, you know, general detoxing, about apricot kernels. I'd heard of pancreatic enzymes, there was no way you could get hold of them. I knew about diets and vegetable juicing and organics and a whole lot of things. And my first major patient who had cancer back then, he was told, it's not medically correct quite, but he was told he had lymphatic cancer all through him and was given 4 months to live. But in any case, they said, your heart's not going to last much longer than that. So I gave him and told him to do everything that we had at that time.
Right.
And instead of 4 months to live, he lived about 14 years. The cancer had disappeared. His oncologist said, you're boring, go away, within 2 years. He's written up in one of the books as MI, are the initials I use for him in the book. He by then had gone out to inland New South Wales, 400 odd miles away, but I happened to be going past, 50 miles is very close, in the Australian bush.
Right.
And I was working with a whole family by then. He was a guy in his 60s. And went to visit them for the day and helped forget lunch in the kitchen. What are we having? Salads, you told us. What's the oil, flaxseed oil, you told us. Where is it in the deep freeze, you told us. What are we eating? Sprouts, you told us. We're drinking red clover tea, you told us. I mean, he had done everything.
Right.
And he lived another 14 years. It's one case history. It's anecdotal.
Yeah.
But never, ever underestimate the benefit you can do of every little fine-tuning thing, making the effort to have that vegetable, making the effort to put greens in it and not just carrot juice. And never underestimate the damage that you can do is saying, oh, to hell with it, I'll use ordinary toothpaste and never mind if I, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
These things are critically important. Yeah. So you can go through without spending a lot of money at it.
Yeah.
But to do it thoroughly, do the testing, make big lifestyle changes. And people say they haven't got time. I said, look, you may not have time not to.
Right.
And if you're going to eschew the chemical radiation procedures and everything else and do a little bit of the alternative options and say, well, I'm doing alternatives now, if you're not doing it thoroughly, you could be missing out.
Yeah, that's important. And the other thing that is important is, of course, there's this big association between feeling better and tailing off on the whole thing, isn't there, and just reverting.
Medicosic. Take pill, get fixed, don't take pills anymore, you're done.
Yeah.
No. If somebody comes in and says, look, I have a problem. Every day I feel hungry.
Mm.
And I say, right, well, try eating food. I'm not joking, though, this is what I mean.
Okay.
And so next day they say, how long do I have to go on eating for? I say, well, it's not a fixer. It's what you need to keep yourself alive.
Right.
I'm thirsty. Look, every day you have to drink. You can't drink, fill yourself with water, and that's it for life.
Right.
All these things, if you're super sympathetic dominant and you quit, you're going to still be super sympathetic dominant and more likely to get tumour cancer, because the blood cancers and the related ones are often different in their requirements entirely. You've got to keep bringing yourself back into balance and know that for you to be balanced in this way, you need to be doing all these things. You can't go back to taking poisons.
Right.
And not get back into the cancer process.
Mm.
And people say, well, what's the most important thing to take? I say, okay, you've got five wheels in the car. Which is the most important? You need all five of them. And all the other little wheels, whatever goes on under the engine. They're better to take a little bit of everything if it comes down to that.
Yeah, okay. So one of the things that's sort of striking about this approach is that, as you say, you're actually looking at restoring health. Whereas that's a complex process, obviously from your description, there's a lot to it.
It's a huge process. And when you start telling, particularly male clients, that they must change their diet, you've got to cope with the wife feeling guilty and criticised. Because diet, I mean, I'm much more than a nutritionist, obviously, a naturopath is, in the Australian sense, is like a GP. But you're dealing a lot with food, and people think, oh, I know about food, I make it every day. But it isn't. It is hugely biochemically complicated.
Mm.
Well, it's complex. I love it, but it's not for everybody.
No, but a lot of the reason that it's become complex is because of what's happened to our food. It's not the simple good stuff it was, and we didn't just eat the stuff that was around us. It's coming from all over the world and it's being processed in all sorts of ways. So it's become a complex business to navigate through all that and find out what is actually good food.
Well, it is. And even if you get organic food, you're getting toxins because you've got, you know, jet aeroplanes spew out a whole lot of chemicals that land even on the organic farms. Mm,
sure.
This wasn't there 40, 30 or 20 years ago. There's just a lot to think about, and we don't realise the damage that we're doing.
Mm.
And the government's not going to ban sugar or additives, or there's too much money invested in it.
Mm. So although it's a complex business, in many ways, by gaining an understanding personally of all these factors and everything, you're not just affecting cancer or the possibility of cancer, or any other specific disease, you're actually affecting your whole system and therefore your likelihood of being...
Well, the advantage of having cancer, if you can call it that, and putting it right, is you're going to cut down your problems of any other health problem.
Yes.
You know, something like Lyme's disease, chronic fatigue, multiple sclerosis, a lot of them all come back to mitochondrial dysfunction. And it's fundamental... good health.
So this relatedness of chronic disease is a very important thing in a way. They're always treated in orthodox medicine, they're all different things and they're treated in different ways. But the way that you look at them, they're actually all connected together and many of them have exactly the same root.
It's a bit like you've got a house and the bricks are crumbling.
Mm-hmm.
And in one house, the roof's collapsing because the walls aren't solid. In another house, the windows no longer fit because the bricks are collapsing. In another house, the foundation's crumbling because the bricks aren't okay. If you put the rebuild the roof or restore the windows, well, then later on the floors. But if you restore all the bricks to proper strength, well, everything else is going to be fine.
Right.
Sometimes patients will say, but look, I haven't listed all my symptoms to you. They're mostly ones of the melancholic temperament.
Right.
And I'm thinking, yep, I know the fundamental problem we need to deal with, but you have to listen to them because that's what they want to say, and it's important.
Mm. Now, I understand now that you're getting into much more training of people so that in order to be able to spread your work and to educate other practitioners to gain the kind of understanding that's taken you decades to come to. And maybe you'd like to tell us a bit more about that.
Okay, well, my thinking here is, I mean, I've had 40 fabulous years in this profession, and I love it. And I'd like trying to explain to people the fundamentals of what we're doing. Instead of saying to a client, do this, take this, don't do that, I tend to explain why. Now, a lot of the time, they don't want to know it. But, and same with the students at the college where I teach, and the postgraduates that come to the Can Survive Resource and Training Centre seminar series. If I can train, and people can come to those session training seminars, even if they're clients without medical background, because even if they sit through a biochemical explanation of what's happening in the mitochondria, which is what? Never heard of it to the average client.
Right.
It may go through them, but at one level, some of them pick it up and say, I'm going to look into this. You'd be surprised how well self-educated many clients are in this, because they've said to themselves, I don't like the thought of chemotherapy. The big Australian study shows it doesn't make that much difference, which was done in Sydney Royal North Shore Hospital, 2.3% improvement years back. And we don't want all that. So then they start exploring and they read. And of course, with the internet, you've got so much information. They're in overload.
Yes.
And then they come and they say, well, look, this says to do that. And over then I read to do that. But my neighbour said she'd been told to do something else.
Yes.
So if you can start explaining everything, even if they don't understand it all, they know that somebody understands it.
That's important.
They know that there are books or seminar series of mine and lots of others, where it is explained. And the practitioners know, even if they don't understand it, because it's very complex, some of it, and they don't necessarily need to know exactly why something is affecting people to three that changes backs, that does this and this and this. But if they know somebody does, or that they can access it if they really want it, they can be that much more confident when they're talking to the clients and the client picks that up and it goes through. So my plan with the training centre is to have, at the moment it's reached a minimum of 5 one-day seminars, one leading on to the next, but I can see it's going to become 10. And it'll be progressive for people who want to get more and more absolutely committed in this particular field, but keeping in mind that this field affects more than cancer, it affects a lot of the degenerative diseases. And, you know, I've got books and the like that support the seminar series, and the people that do the seminar series or get started on it, we then have study groups and membership groups. I send out newsletters. Somebody says to me, as somebody did the other day, you know, are you really giving meat to people? We talked about earlier. So I said, right. And then there's a 2,000 word newsletter goes out to everybody who's done the seminars. So we keep building on it, and everybody's request that comes in or question that comes in. And then I'm starting up, or have started with it, a mentoring system whereby, because many of the students at different colleges, and it's no fault of the college, they've got a lot to teach, that, well, you know, we sort of don't feel, we feel we need more here or there. So they can come and I charge so much an hour, which is less than a consultation fee even, and they can come on their own, they can bring their patient or client with them, or 4 students can get together and share the cost and have a topic and we go through it. And for those who are really interested in exploring, the later books that I'm writing, especially books four, is an immense amount of literature research. So the idea then is that somebody, I say, look, well, okay, you go and look at the effect of vitamin E on, and the different types of vitamin E on the level of this compound in the blood tests that we do, or whatever. So they can all get drawn into it, and then as it's written up, they get acknowledged. This was their research bit of it. And because of the internet and Skype and things, we can do this in a very integrated way. Mm-hmm. And I'm not interested in doing this financially. I'm fortunate enough that I'm, you know, I don't need to be making a roaring income. I'm much more interested in having, partly in, one would say, in sharing ideas. What I'm really interested in is discussing the ideas with people who are interested and who challenge me to find out more and who I can learn from.
Right.
And we can pull it all together.
Mm. So you're finding there's a good level of interest.
The first level one seminar we announced from 3 to 4 months before it was due to start, and it was fully booked within a few weeks.
Wow.
And the second one, which was for graduates of the first one, I say graduates, attendees of the second one, that was within a few weeks, that was 20% booked straight away. So yes, and there's a lot of people who've written in for the current one saying, yes, we want to do it, and we'll, you know, they haven't signed up yet, but they will, you know, we will do it at the last minute. Yes, there's a huge amount, and it's coming from, I mean, there are doctors on the course.
Great.
And there are naturopathic students on the course. And there are husbands of people with cancer on the course, and they sit there looking a bit bemused.
Yes.
But imagine. They want to come to the second level.
Right.
Or by the third level, I think they'll have stopped. But, you know, they'll have got a lot more confidence in what they're doing, because many people will come and say, as clients, well, I'll do all the alternative things, but just to be sure, I'm going to do a chemo as well or something like that. As if they're not really convinced that it matters if they blow their diet or don't do their detoxes and the like. And it does, and with the courses behind them, it just... If I say something in one seminar and somebody says something to their great cousin somewhere and they save their life, hey, that's fabulous.
Absolutely, absolutely. Knowledge is power.
And we're not, you know, anybody can use all or anything that we're suggesting in these seminars and in my way of helping people in line with any other therapy they choose to use. If they want to use it in line with chemotherapy, well, fine. Or with radiation, or with surgery. You may be damaging the body with chemo and damaging the immune system with chemo, and the alternatives may be interfered with in that way, but this is, you don't have to choose one or the other. No. I might think they should, but then it's not my job to persuade them either way. Right. I can say, this is what we can do, that's what they can do, and they have to decide,
right.
Because they
right.
have to take the consequences.
Okay. And your program would naturally account for whatever they might choose to do in the way of orthodox treatment in compensating for the negatives of that treatment.
Yes.
Yeah.
So. As much as we can. Now, to really do that thoroughly, I would have to understand every chemotherapy agent and exactly what it did. And I've got enough to do flat out with my half. But if they're doing things that you'll often get oncologists saying, well, you mustn't take antioxidants because our chemotherapy is trying to oxidize and damage the cells that way. In fact, I think it's Ralph Moss that said this very clearly, and he's written a lot about cancer. He's a very good researcher and academician, investigatively. The oxidizing effect of chemotherapy is so strong that the effects of our antioxidants are relatively puny. It's not going to interfere.
Right.
I was at a nutrition and cancer conference in Turkey a few years back, and there was this really interesting set of results. I forget the types of cancer, Specifically, there were several reported, because there were several histogram bars, radiation on its own. Curcumin in its own was slightly better, but radiation and curcumin was even better.
Right.
So for radiologists to say, don't take curcumin, they're shooting themselves in the foot. There are many times when it's additive.
Right.
And of the three, surgery, radiation, and chemo, I would say surgery. One can make a case for surgery if you've got a tumour that is space-occupying and damaging. If it's blocking the bladder and you could get kidney failure, if it's whatever.
Right.
Debulking. The medical profession is now realising that you don't need a full mastectomy, a lumpectomy, to just take the most of the tumour away. And same with prostate. You don't have to take the whole thing out. Get rid of the lump, if you like. And there are times when the tumours are such that if you try and break them down, as you can do with a pancreatic extract, it's like spring cleaning a house. If you do it too fast, the whole house is a mess.
Right.
You don't want to overload the detoxing capacity of the liver by a sudden breakdown of tumours. Some people, the liver, the toxic burden might be too much. And I was at a conference some months back, a lot of doctors saying they had this great new way of treating cancer with this, or their protocol was getting results. They said, you know, we lose a few patients to tumor lysis syndrome, i.e. the tumor's broken down too fast, the toxin's so much it kills them. But most people do well. I said, well, in discussion afterwards, I said, what do you do about eliminating the toxins, enemas? Oh, no, we don't do that. But if we combine this detoxing with whatever they're doing, it can work constructively together.
Yes, yeah, that's very important.
So it's, you know, there's no avenues barred when we work.
No, right.
There might be preferences, but it can work with whatever other options they want to follow.
Okay, well, I think that's about all we've got time for today. It's been fascinating. Yeah, you know, thanks so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Doing a brilliant job of talking about such complexities. You said it all in a very lovely and comprehensible way for ordinary mortals like myself, which is fantastic. And also a big thanks for your dedication in getting to the bottom of what's going on with cancer.
That's really my pleasure.
And what can really help people. So that has been a fantastic contribution.
Thank you.
Well, we covered a lot today, as I expected. But as usual, links to topics and people mentioned will be posted on the Yes to Life website. Just go to yestolife.org.uk. That's yestolife.org.uk. And click the link to radio in the left-hand sidebar. Please send me any thoughts about the show to radio@yestolife.org.uk. And keep an eye out for this month's edition of the UK Health Radio's Health Triangle magazine, which features additional material from some of my guests. Next week, I shall be looking into the controversy surrounding mammography with Rosa and Phil Hughes, who dedicated themselves to getting the facts behind breast screening. Thanks for listening to the show. Goodbye.